DW.
Susan Avery is President and Director Emeritus of the renowned Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution in the USA. She's also a member of the United Nations Scientific Advisory Board, which provides advice on science and technology to the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. She's been visiting Bonn as part of the celebrations to mark 20 years of the former German capital in its new role as Germany's United Nations hub. Susan Avery, it's great to have you with us. Let's start at the very beginning. When did you first become interested in the ocean?
Well, I've always been interested in large water bodies, let's say. I grew up in Michigan and spent a lot of my childhood on the Great Lakes. They are certainly big for me. As a child, they looked like the ocean. Of course, they're freshwater instead of salt water. But they also had a loved when we could take vacations to the ocean and just be able to be in the pounding surf and walk along the beaches. But I'm by training an atmospheric scientist, and atmosphere and ocean are so connected. They're both fluids with two different densities, as I think about it.
You've said there is a major connection between oceans and atmosphere. Yeah. Just for the layperson, can you put it in a nutshell?
Yes, let me try it this way. In our planetary system, we have two major fluids, the ocean and the atmosphere, and think of them as two dance partners. And these two dance partners are moving along, but in order to get a choreographic dance, they have to talk to each other. And they talk to each other through the ocean-atmosphere interface, which is where you have wave motions and spray and all of these things that help them communicate to each other. And these two fluids, these two dance partners, create different dances. Sometimes they could be an El Nino dance. Other times they can be a hurricane dance. But in reality, what they do together is transport heat, carbon, and water, which are the major global cycles that we have in our planetary system.
So from that point of view, the oceans play a key role in what we call climate and also what we call weather.
Absolutely.
Now, these are natural occurrences, but we humans have also been interfering a little bit with the balance.
I would say that's fair to say. And we talk a lot about temperature increases associated with infusion of our carbon that is human produced. And the thing is that extra carbon dioxide that gets released into the atmosphere through our fossil fuel burning and deforestation as well, produces extra heat. Of the carbon dioxide that we release into the atmosphere, half of the carbon dioxide will stay in the atmosphere, 25% will go into the ocean, 25% will be uptake by the land. But the heating, 93% of the extra warming is actually in the ocean.
That's a massive heat.
It's a massive heat. And you can understand why, because the atmosphere is a gas. The ocean is this liquid, this massive liquid that covers two-thirds of our planet. It has a huge ability to store that heat. But that heat doesn't just stay at the surface. Once the ocean surface gets heated, it's not going to stay there because it's this fluid motion and it mixes. And so we're beginning to see greater and greater and greater temperature increases at greater and greater depths in the ocean. And that heat, once it gets into the ocean, can stay there for centuries. Whereas the upper ocean might stay there for maybe 40, 50 years. When you start getting it really into the deeper parts of the ocean because of the density and the capacity, it stays there for a long time.
So what impact does that have?
It means that carbon dioxide we've put into the atmosphere already and the heating associated with that means that we're already predestined for a certain amount of global temperature increase. Many people will say we already have predestined at least a 1.5 degree. Some people will say we've done almost a 2 degree. You see extra heat also in the ocean when El Nino occurs, and it affects our coral reef systems that you have. But the extra carbon dioxide, when it gets dissolved into the ocean, basically through very simple chemical equations, will basically increase the acidification in the ocean. So our coral reef systems and a lot of our ecosystems that are in the ocean are having a battle between warming and those ecosystems that involve shell production, as in our reef systems, are also battling acidification issues. This is really critical because it attacks a lot of the base of the food chain for a lot of these ecosystems.
Clearly, the effect climate change is having on our ocean ecosystems is a huge problem, but I still have the feeling a lot of people are not aware of it. How can we get the message across?
I think it's important, you know, things like Living Planet and other ways to really begin to educate people and involve people in understanding their environment and their planet. I think that in many ways, those who don't live on the coast think that the ocean is not affecting them when really it does. It affects them in many ways. I think articulating what the ocean does in terms of providing services to you as a human being. So I often tell general audiences that every second breath you take comes from the ocean. So you should thank for the ocean just for your ability to breathe. Thanking the ocean for helping regulate our climate and rain patterns. Thanking the ocean for the fish and food supply that it provides, and perhaps not overfishing it so much that you can sustain that wonderful resource. Thanking the ocean for a lot of the filtering aspects of pollution. You know, you look at the little oyster and how much it can filter toxins out of our water systems. It's an amazing little creature. Getting exposed, I think, to these broader things that directly are contributing to your life is important.
One of the areas of the Earth which are affected most strongly by the warming of our climate and by changes in the ocean and the atmosphere are the polar areas.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I believe you have also worked in the Arctic and Antarctic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if we start with the north, the Arctic Ocean is changing dramatically. We just had a record warm winter and a low extent of winter sea ice cover. What impact does that have?
Well, two major impacts. There's a melting of ice, land-based ice. It's also sea ice as well. But the melting of the great glaciers basically is a major contributor to sea level rise. That the acceleration of ice loss in the Arctic is a combination now that we know of not just the atmosphere melting the ice from above, but also warmer waters, ocean waters, that find ways through the fjords and basically help melt underneath in a way or deground these glaciers. And so you're beginning to see a very rapid increase in ice loss in the Arctic. And that is a major concern for our sea level rise. But it's also a major concern because that land-based ice, when it comes into the ocean, you get a freshening of certain parts of the ocean. So you're beginning to see a freshening of certain parts of the ocean, particularly the subpolar North Atlantic regions that have a potential, if you will, for basically interfacing with our normal thermohaline circulations, our circulation systems, and could dramatically change that. The changes in salinity of the ocean are beginning to be noticed. And when you see changes in salinity in the ocean, that's a signal that the water cycle is becoming more vigorous. And so all of this is coupled together. What's in the Arctic is not staying in the Arctic. What's in the Antarctic is not staying in the Antarctic. And I would say that the polar regions are regions where we don't have a lot of time before we see massive changes, where we really need to get our observations and our science and our models working together.
Do you see any chance of our holding up these developments, given that you told us how long the heat stays
in the ocean
yeah, and just for how long a period we have already influenced what is happening in
right,
our seas?
Right. I don't have an answer to that question, to be quite honest with you. I think that we're still learning a lot about the Arctic and its interface with lower latitudes, how that water basically changes circulation systems and at what scale. But I think that what's really critically needed right now in order to get a better sense on the evolution of the Arctic is a real concerted observing network that's going up there. We know so little about the Arctic. We know so little about the life forms underneath the ice. We now have the technologies. We're right at the stage where we can do so much to further our understanding. And I would really put a lot into the Arctic right now if I had the money to do so. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important because the Arctic will be a major economic zone. We've already seen the Northwest Passage, the passage through the Arctic waters. We're going to see migration of certain fisheries around the world, and we don't even know completely what sort of biological life we have underneath that ice. We have the ability to get underneath the ice now. I call these the frontiers of the ocean, and that frontiers includes looking under ice. It's a really exciting time.
So, Susan, we've talked a lot about the changes happening in our ocean and the key roles it plays in our world in so many ways. On the whole, looking to the future, are you concerned about our ocean?
Well, I am concerned about the ocean. There are so many stressors that are happening in the ocean. We've talked about the climate change issue, but the pollution issue, whether it comes from fertilizers or whether it's pollution that comes from industry, or a lot of our global commerce is shipped via the ocean. Our ships are not exactly the cleanest. We do have, and what's gotten probably a lot of visibility, is the trash that we put into the ocean, particularly plastics, and of course the long life that plastics have in the ocean. You know, trash doesn't belong in the ocean. Our trash doesn't belong in the ocean. We certainly have overfished the ocean, and we continue to overfish it in many ways. So there's pluses and there's minuses. I do think the ocean is under threat. It's largely ignored in many ways. And we need to draw attention to it, not just in terms of little pieces of the ocean, but bigger pieces. And perhaps if the ocean became a nation that was represented in the UN, we might get better along. We might make further progress. We get so much from it. We want to make sure we sustain that.
This report was brought to you by DW.